Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 1:08 p.m. that is Pacific Summer Time. Today is August 27th, and we've had a meaningful move in precious metals today. We have to go back to the heady days of the early 2000s before we've seen significant moves like this in silver, where it was up 52 cents in here today. And this is extending the rebound. When we think about the trend up since May, there have been three occasions when it pulled back by anything up to a dollar, but mostly around 70 cents. So a reaction of more than 70 cents would really be required to question this staircase step sequence uptrend with a sequence of ranges, one above another. But far more important than that is the fact that it has now clearly broken the downward bias. There was a very clear sequence of lower rally highs evident from the peak in 2016 all the way down to the lows we saw this year. The significant rally we've had over the last 2 months is clearly breaking the downtrend. It is, I think, also increasing the potential that we're going to at least see a retest of that $20 area. $20 represents, I think, the upper side of this long range that's been in formation now for about 5 years. Silver, of course, is a fraction of the price of gold, but it's also a fraction of its peak level back in 2011. There's been a fair amount of commentary about the gold and silver ratio. There was two ways of thinking about it. The first was that platinum prices are so very depressed that there was a question whether silver might not be able to play catch up with gold. Platinum hasn't yet, but it does look like it's firming within its base formation. I continue to think that it is only a matter of time before people realize just how cheap platinum is. It's still a precious metal, and despite the fact that people are not buying as many diesel vehicles any longer, it is certainly a precious metal, and there isn't all that much of it about. So it's a considerably less liquid market than silver, and silver in turn is a lot less liquid than gold. It does suggest that a good size hedge fund could buy all of the outstanding contracts in platinum, and obviously it would be a much easier market to corner, for example, than silver. And yet the price has not moved very much. It was up $10 here today, but it does look increasingly likely we're going to see this also follow on the upside. And of course, gold prices were also in positive territory in here today. When we look at the price, it has been consolidating over the course of the last 2 weeks. That reaction is relatively similar sized, perhaps a little smaller than that which went through between the end of June and the beginning of August. But this is a clear upward break and a sustained move below the lower side of the underlying range of what is now an underlying range would be required to question momentum. An increasingly wide overextension relative to the trend mean is evolving, but that's what we expect from a base formation completion. When you get a base formation completion, you expect a massive move on the upside. That's the massive, or I guess that's why we define base formations and ranges more generally as explosions waiting to happen. The longer the price ranges for, the more likely it is that it will go up both above and below the moving average, and the moving average will no longer trend but will smooth out. When you get the breakout, then necessarily you're going to get a wide overbought condition. And because a vacuum of supply forms above the range, then the price will continue to rally until supply and demand come back into balance. It's at that point you can then anticipate some consolidation. And the big question is, how much of a consolidation will gold get? One of the primary reasons why gold is rallying is because of competitive currency devaluation. When, for example, we look at the euro, Europe badly needs a weaker currency. Despite the fact that we had an upside key reversal on Friday, there has been no follow-through. There is a clear downward bias. There is a rivetingly consistent sequence of lower rally highs, plenty of evidence of resistance in the region of the trend mean. That is going to have to change in order to question the downward bias. Then when we look at some of the commodity currencies, the Australian dollar popped on the upside yesterday but did not follow through on the upside in here today. It is somewhat oversold in the short term, but again, here's another currency that is still trending downwards in a reasonably consistent manner. The New Zealand dollar moved to a new low here today and is extending its breakdown below the 65 cent level. Of course, the most important of the emerging market currencies is the renminbi, and it was at a new low in here today with the dollar extending its move above 7, and China needs a weaker currency. The stock market in China was in positive territory. There's at least some evidence now that the Chinese are attempting to support the stock market, at least to bolster confidence. What I found rather interesting is, despite the rhetoric about the trade war, and certainly there are a lot of moving parts, and it is an incredibly confusing and difficult environment to try and navigate. I think the big point is that we do need to monitor exactly what is going on in terms of the price of assets. We also have to monitor the outlook for monetary policy. Well, we know that gold is rallying because central banks the world over are cutting interest rates, and governments are increasingly willing to run significant deficits, and the USA has certainly been the leader on both fronts. The fact that the dollar remains firm against a background where the US government is running such an enormous deficit and cutting interest rates and potentially now also getting ready to kickstart quantitative easing again, that does highlight the fact that other countries have it harder, and economic growth in other countries is moderating faster. I've heard people talk about the least dirty shirt, and that is potentially why the dollar remains somewhat stronger. But of course, it's also the interest rate differential, the very clear fact that US 10-year treasuries, they might still be trending downwards, or the yield might be trending downwards, but it's still positive. Even at 1.47%, 10-year treasury yields are still positive. This is by far the big lesson here, that negative interest rates give a great deal of optionality to longer dated bonds, and they are capable of really quite profound moves. And the 30-year is now at 1.95%. Well, when we then think about the outlook for the yield curve, it's getting increasingly inverted, with the 2-year around 1.5% and the 10-year at 1.47%. Well, now we have an inversion of about 5 basis points. And when you go all the way back to 1 month, then yields are still north of 2%. So there is ample scope for interest rate cuts being priced into the yield curve right now, and we're likely to continue to see an inversion until they are in fact realized. So the market is now pricing in at least 50 basis points of interest rate cuts in the not so distant future. And that, I think, is one of the reasons why we need to pay particular attention to what's going on in terms of the stock market. We're still within just a couple of percent of the all-time peak. Now, there was a failed upside break, and it has come back to test the region of the trend mean. But it would really need to be sustaining a move below the trend mean in order to really confirm that we're back in a supply-dominated environment. The weakness of the banking sector is obviously a function of the inverted yield curve and the very low interest rate environment generally. And I think that's certainly something that we do need to pay attention to, considering that banks are liquidity providers. By issuing debt, they enhance the liquidity situation in the economy generally. They have been rather inhibited in that ability because they've been rebuilding their balance sheets. The US banking sector has been the clear outperformer globally among banking sectors in the developed sector, in the developed markets. When we then think about what's going on in terms of Europe, well, we can see, for example, that the prices have steadied over the course of the last few days, but it's a very clear downtrend, and there has been a distinct absence of clear upward dynamics to confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. Then, when we think about what's going on in terms of the Japanese market, well, the Topix Banks Index has continued to erode. It's been trending down now for a year and a half. It failed to push back above the trend mean last year, and it's coming back down towards the lows in 2016. The Japanese yen has been rather steady over the course of this month. It weakened yesterday and held on to the majority of its advance in here today. This is the second clear upward dynamic from the region of the low for the dollar put in January. So when we think about this, the potential here, European yields are clearly inverted. Japanese yields are also inverted, are negative, but not to the same extent. That's been putting upward pressure on the yen, because simply on a relative value basis. But Japan definitely does not want the yen strengthening through the 105 area. We're starting to see evidence coming through that they're willing to defend that area and weaken the currency. Well, that increases the potential that we are going to see a change of strategy from the Bank of Japan, or that they are going to be willing to embark upon further stimulative measures, or at least to try and weaken their currency further. And that would suggest that there is scope for the stock market to start to steady. The second section index has been pausing over the course of the last 2 weeks. It needs to push back above the trend mean. It's worth remembering, though, that Japan is a significant buyer of ETFs, and if they do embark upon additional stimulative measures, then perhaps not only will they try to defend a level on the yen and stop it from appreciating, but that they'll start defending, or they'll start defending a level on the Nikkei, and perhaps 20,000 is that level. So I think the Japanese market is one to pay particular attention to, because additional stimulative measures are becoming an urgent priority in Japan, whereas Europe also needs stimulative measures, but they are only just coming back from holiday. So it is going to take at least another 3 or 4 weeks before the next ECB meeting, so that then they can announce their decisions. Then, when we think about the pound, it had been pulling back really rather violently over much of June and July, but it has been rebounding, and there is increasing willingness to price in the potential, at least for a reversionary rally, and that there is the willingness in Europe to come to some form of agreement on the Brexit deal. The simple fact of the matter is that you have to be willing in a negotiation to walk away, and giving a credible notion to the, or at least lending some credibility to the view that Europe, or that the UK will leave, without a deal was the only way that they're going to get any form of deal that could potentially pass Parliament. That, I think, is rather favourable. I think there is still the potential that the UK is going to form some form of deal. But we're probably going to have still a fair bit of volatility between now and the end of October. There's also growing speculation about the security of the peg that the Hong Kong dollar has had over the course of the last few decades. And the Hong Kong dollar has, or excuse me, the Hong Kong Monetary Authority has got about $450 billion, so they can defend the currency if they wish. Of course, when we then think about how is it performing versus the renminbi, perhaps the other way around would probably be the best way to look at it, but we can, well, actually this is probably the best way. When we look at the performance of the Hong Kong dollar versus the renminbi, it is breaking out. There's been a significant period where the renminbi has been trading stronger than the Hong Kong dollar. That's certainly been the case since 2007. And there's the potential that we are going to get back towards parity. At some stage, it is logical that Hong Kong would change its peg from the US dollar to the renminbi. That would, I think, logically be one of Beijing's priorities. The most opportune time to do that would be when it reaches parity. I don't think there's any likelihood of Hong Kong breaking the peg and simply trading as an independent currency. That's, I think, really rather unlikely. But it could move the peg. That could certainly be one of the potential outcomes of Beijing's increasing inroads into the former colony. So I think this is a rate to pay attention to, but it's probably not an urgent priority to think about until we do see parity. That would be the most opportune time to think about enforcing a change in the peg. Don't think that Hong Kong is voluntarily going to do it. When we look at the Hang Seng, it had pulled back and then bounced over the last couple of days, and it was in negative territory today, but not by very much, and has really held the majority of the bounce that we saw on Monday. The 25,000 level represents the lower side of the range. I do think that considering the risk that we have in China and the deteriorating standards of governance, that China is more of a trader's market than an investor's market, but it is oversold in the short term. Think it's also worth highlighting the Thai baht, which continues to strengthen, and it's one of the few Asian currencies that is in fact strengthening versus the US dollar. And I think that's a rather clear anomaly. It is putting pressure, however, on the SET index, and it's right down now around the 1600 point level. When we then think about that in terms of, for example, an investment trust, and veteran subscribers will remember that David had a position in A&W going back years. It did break out in pounds, and now it is coming back to test the upper side of that long range. So those previous peaks around 600p will need to hold if this breakout is to be sustained. This relative strength we're seeing in Thailand also suggests that it is a potential beneficiary from manufacturing moving away from China. When we pay attention to what's going on in terms of China, the fact that the Nasdaq remains above the trend mean, and that Costco opened its first store in Shanghai today, and the place was mobbed. That's contributing to the outperformance of the company. Of course, it also suggests that this talk of boycotting US or, well, I guess primarily US brands is a little premature. There is significant demand in China for the security of buying from foreign firms, particularly when it comes to foodstuffs. And that has certainly helped Costco today. Of course, Walmart has been active in China for years, and it has also contributed to the outperformance of the share. Of course, both of these companies also have significant dividend or records of dividend increases. That's been the case for Walmart for years, and they've been one of the dividend aristocrats for a significant number of years already. That bond-like characteristic is helping to really drive home the outlook for these consumer-oriented countries. It's also helping to flatter the performance of the utilities sector. Then when we think about the potential for inflation, that is the one thing that could potentially have a significant impact, particularly on the countries running significant deficits. Well, oil prices could certainly move inflationary figures, but despite some strength in here today, there is still a sequence of lower rally highs. High oil prices are not really great for anyone other than producers. Low oil prices tend to represent a deflationary focus, so the longer they just stay stable, the better that is likely to be. The continued compression of yields and the outlook for central banks to continue to cut interest rates, and for Europe in particular to go into negative territory, is having this incredible impact on bond prices. And that is having, considering that everything is priced on a relative basis off the 10-year yield, that is enhancing the attractiveness of stocks generally. If we see anything that could potentially represent an improvement in some of the major factors with regard to the trade war or growth that investors are worried about, then that is likely to start drawing some of the cash off the sidelines and back into the market. And we are heading into the September and October period. That is generally when we do get some volatility, but I do think that as long as the majority of stock market indices are trading above their respective trend means, then we have to continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.